Welcome to my Soul Life podcast. This is my playground and I'm your host, Susan Scollin. I believe that we can live a life we love every day. To do this, we have to go on a journey to uncover who we are on every layer. Join me each Monday for conversations about following our soul's calling and embodying what lights us up so we can become even more amazing people. And then later in the week, I'll be back with our Soul Life conversations where we open up and explore who we truly are to become authentically us. Be inspired. A quick reminder for you that all the information shared in this podcast is my experience and the experience of my guest. It's not medical or mental health advice, diagnosis or treatment, and I'd encourage you to seek professional advice where needed. Today I'm chatting with Kate Squires. When you listen to my chat with Kate, I want you to think about what would happen or have happened if Kate didn't go on this journey, not just for herself, but for all the people she's supporting in the world. And then ask yourself, what am I being called to do or to let go of or to be? What's that next level of value I can bring to the world? Because our intuition is always calling us. Sometimes we have to slow down to really hear it. After 20 years working in the beauty industry and working her way to a demanding corporate role, Kate's journey of health issues was a doozy of a run sheet. Gut issues, hormone imbalance, and a chronic state of stress led to a nervous breakdown and left her feeling extremely unwell, lost, and disconnected from herself. In search of purpose and knowing there was more to life, Kate took matters into her own hands and became an integrative nutrition and holistic health coach and became her own first client. Now, after learning how personalized health is so incredibly important, Kate uses her coaching experience and AI tech to help stressed, overworked, and underappreciated women who've tried everything to lose weight go behind their genes to unlock a sustainable, personalized approach for their weight loss success and reignite their missing spark. This is an incredible conversation, and you can hear Kate's passion and her unwavering belief in what she's doing and who she's become because she's created this in her own life. She knows transformation is possible and that we can all live happy, healthy lives. Kate and I would love to hear what you took away from this episode, so head over to my website, susanscollin.com, or Instagram, my.soul.life.podcast, and tell us. And you can reach out to Kate via the show notes for this episode on my website too. See you inside. Well, welcome, Kate. It's lovely to be here with you and to have this conversation with you. So thank you for jumping on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited. So I love asking, you know, what's bringing you the most joy at the moment?
So I think it's probably two things bringing me the most joy. The first is finally getting to a place in my life where I have control of my own schedule. You know, I just made the big jump into working to myself full time, and with some of the learning I've been recently doing about kind of genes and epigenetics, I've learned that it's in my genes, the importance of having control of my own schedule and how much well-being that actually does bring me. So it's really wild that in kind of 6 weeks into moving into owning my own business, the freedom that I'm feeling with that. And I think that sense of freedom is something that, say, 12 months ago I was really longing for. And a few years ago I just didn't realize was possible. So you know, it's been really great being able to wake up every day and just really consistently feel that sense of happiness, which I've not felt in a really long time. And the second thing is mountain biking. So I took up riding at the end of 2020, and I think a sense of community that that's brought back into my life is just incredible. You know, I ride with, I think we're up to about 16 of us now, a group of women that ride quite consistently together. And I guess that community extends beyond the times that we're riding together, but, you know, the riding brings not only, you know, it's exercise and fitness, but also I think the mental challenges that come with that and, you know, trying to psych ourselves up to these kind of trickier rides and also the fun that comes, you know, there's, you know, so much fun getting out there, but we're also in nature. And La Nina hasn't been great for it over the last couple of months. It's kind of the trails have been more like rivers, but you know, it's incredibly motivating, and I think it's a hobby that's kind of, it's fruitful for me in so many aspects of my life, and yeah, brings me so much joy.
That sounds amazing. Thank you for sharing. And with the, like, your schedule, you said that your genes and your epigenetics are showing you that that's exactly that freedom of schedule. Can you expand on that a little bit more?
Yeah, so I've begun working with some AI, which is called Shay, and the AI has been built off 20 years of research from 15 different sciences, and primarily a big driving factor of that is epigenetics. So from what they've learned through these 20 years of research in how people's bodies respond to different things. So a lot of it's based around morphology. So you might have often heard body types being referred to as endomorph, ectomorph, or mesomorph. So it's something that's used a lot in the fitness industry, but essentially that is derived from how an embryo develops and how different systems in the body are first developed as an embryo. And so that then is able to categorize you into essentially one of six health types. It's much more personalized than that, but essentially because of the way my body has developed as, like, from the time of being an embryo and all of the research over these 20 years, something that is really important for me is pleasure, but also kind of time and space and having that control over my own schedule. So anywhere where I'm feeling I don't have that control really just automatically eliminates that sense of freedom and in turn pleasure. And has an effect on my overall health in so many ways. So there's a lot more that goes into it. But yeah, it's and I think that's the beautiful thing about Shay and the AI is that it's completely holistic. So yes, it looks at you know, it gives you a personalized recommendation based on what foods to eat and when, what type of exercise in the day to do and when to move your body, but it's also holistic. So for me, you know, it looks at, there's four other areas it looks at, which one is mind, one is place, so where you live, your environment, climate, that type of thing. The other is social, so how you're interacting in social environments and the types of people or types of relationships that are really going to make you thrive. And then also genius, so everything to do with your work life. And so for me, genetically, two of the most important things for me are place, so my environment, and then also genius, so work. So because I've spent so much of my life where my life was all about work, but I got to the point where I was really living out of alignment with my values, and also I had absolutely no control of my schedule. Over time, that's just, I've kind of dug myself into a little hole with that, and it's really contributed, amongst other things, to burnout and just really not feeling great. And yeah, so it's the one thing I find is great about the AI is there's so much that I think we instinctively know, but being able to contextualize it in the full scope of your health is really affirming, and that it's not just some, you know, crazy idea that you have in your head. It's that I'm actually genetically wired to need this in life or require this, or yeah. So it's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it sounds incredible, and it's amazing that you can see that through our genes, like that you are wired for pleasure. I think all humans are, but how that plays out for you is different, right? You know, unique to you.
Yeah, definitely. It's as I said, the AI categorizes you into one of six health types, which is based around that morphology and how the embryo develops, but you still kind of link up between those six different health types, and there's different traits that come in different ways, but it's interesting. You know, I sit, everything's put together kind of in a circle, and that circle also actually maps the brain and the areas of the brain that drive you genetically. But I sit directly across from one of my really good friends who I've been working with some goals with her in the AI. And like you said, we all want pleasure, but pleasure is a driver for us in completely different ways. It's wild how different we are, even though she's one of my best mates. We have so much in common and we do so much together genetically. We're driven so, so differently. Mm-hmm. And that shows up in, you know, the different times in the day that exercise is going to make us feel great, or the foods that make us feel great. It's health is so unique. And even though genetically there are those similarities, our environment and what's called a phenotype, which is what helps to kind of turn, or what contributes to genes turning on and off, is always going to be so different because we're all living very, very different lives. Our brains all function differently. So we're always going to have a different response to someone, just a different response to something compared to somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds really incredible, really deep in the science, but also like the, you know, how you can apply it in your own life, and that you can play around with it as well, like run experiments on yourself effectively.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I mentioned, you know, within the AI, you fall into one of six health types, but as your health changes, you can move around that circle. So it's ever evolving with you as your health changes and evolves. So it's great. It's not like it's one prescription for you for life, because that's not realistic. We don't stay the same.
Yeah, we don't. And like what we're eating today is not potentially what we'll be eating in 3 or 6 months. Yeah. How we're moving our body the same, how we're talking to ourselves, like all of those sorts of areas, it all evolves.
There's so many variables in life that are beyond our control that we're never going to be able to control, and that's just part of life. So, you know, having a tool like this that can give us some guidance and kind of really unlock those secrets that are hiding in our genes. It's incredible.
Yeah, cool. Well, you've talked a little bit about your journey already, so can you dive into that space for us? Because I think what we'll hear is what you know now would have been really useful tools for you to have back then, but you didn't have them, and that's okay. But it'd be a really incredible journey to hear about.
Yeah. So I guess my story really begins when stress really started to take a hold of my life. Like, I consider myself really lucky that I had a really healthy, wonderful upbringing. You know, I grew up in a tiny little town in country northern New South Wales, which is, you know, a pub, a general store and a post office. You know, growing up on a half acre block with a big veggie garden that my dad and my pop spent so much time in. And, you know, I had a mum who loved to cook, so we always had really beautiful food prepared. I always had really great food in my lunchbox. I can remember my best friend in high school would always come and kind of, you know, steal half of the sandwich that I had, because mum always made really great food. But I was taught really great things about kind of health and nutrition from a very young age, like, you know, packaged and processed foods weren't, you know, we ate them and we had treats and we never went without, but it was things like, you know, we were only ever allowed to have soft drink on the weekends and kind of things like that, which I think set me up with some great fundamentals of health from a really young age. And, you know, movement was always a part of my life growing up in a tiny town as well. There wasn't a lot to do and not really any way to get around. So we were always riding our bikes everywhere and swimming in the river. And, you know, I was a little athletics kid and netball and dancing and things. So, yeah, so I'd learned some really great fundamentals about what to eat and that movement is important for my body from a very young age. And I think that set me up with a great foundation for my 20s. But then as I hit my 30s and my early 30s, I started to get a bit more serious about my career. And that's where stress kind of really began to take a hold. So my background is I've been a makeup artist for 20 years, and around the time I was working for a cosmetics company and promoted to quite a high position in the business. So with that type of promotion comes additional workload, responsibility, pressure. And that's where I began to start to work really long days. So, you know, getting into the office at 8 in the morning, not leaving till 8 o'clock at night, sometimes 10 o'clock at night. And, you know, that's a really common pattern for so many young professionals. Mm-hmm. But what I was doing within those hours of the day started to become really stressful, and also the workplace began to become quite toxic as well. And, you know, stress began to arise as, you know, demands from above to kind of always be working harder and producing more, and, you know, creating something from nothing, where budgets were really low, conflict between teams, you know, having to pick up a bit of slack where other people were dropping the ball, you know, other senior managers just speaking to other team members really, really terribly. And, you know, even things like needing to be available to the business 24/7, after hours, weekends, and, you know, being reprimanded for not answering your phone either after hours or weekends. Because it really became kind of take, take, take from the business, the type of thing where, you know, you're a good employee if you're the first one there and the last one to leave. And, you know, it was really noticed when that wasn't you. So, yeah, I think the biggest thing is it just became incredibly demanding of my time. And I think in all of that stress, that's when I really began to use alcohol as a coping mechanism. So, you know, I'd, you know, leave work at 8 o'clock at night, come home, I'd open a bottle of wine, have, you know, one glass of wine turns into the whole bottle, and then, you know, working those types of hours as well, not being prepared with food. So I was making really poor food choices and not really getting any form of nutritional value from food majority of the time. And I've always had some gut stuff, so dairies, I've always, you know, been sensitive to dairy. And I was probably about 18 when I think lactose intolerance and IBS were confirmed. So that combination of drinking a lot of alcohol, bad food choices, chronic stress, my gut just began to be in a really, really, really bad shape. So I also began to have a lot of food sensitivity to foods that I could previously eat and be fine from, but they started, you know, causing issues. And that's when elimination became a problem for me. And so, you know, it's IBS-D. And so I think I went through a period of about 4 months where I didn't have normal or what's considered healthy elimination. You know, if we're talking kind of Bristol stool chart, it's being up around that 6 and 7 kind of constantly for about 4 months.
Which is very, very loose.
Very, very loose. Very loose. Yeah. I think, you know, you and I both being interested in the gut health space and having our own gut stuff, you get very comfortable talking about elimination, but I'll keep it clean for the purpose of the podcast. But, yeah, but also with that looseness comes a lot of pain and discomfort. And when I was working for many hours as well, I'd get to the point where I'd get caught out at work and I'd be in meetings thinking, I need to get out of this meeting now and get to the bathroom or I'm just not going to make it. And, you know, I would be in these meetings that it might not be appropriate to excuse myself from. So that then comes with a whole host of other psychological stress. And, you know, if anyone knows IBSD and the sense of urgency that comes with those flares at times, you know, I was often seen probably darting from one side of the office to try and make it to the bathroom. Thankfully, I made it every time, a couple of near misses, but most of the time I made it. And then also I was still doing makeup at the time as well. So, you know, normally you're spending anywhere from half an hour, 45 minutes to an hour with someone to get through their makeup, and you're probably on a time schedule. So it's not really ideal to excuse yourself in those moments, but there were times where I'd have to. And that I think then brings up, you know, a whole, it kind of feeds into self-criticism and kind of adds to the total amount of stress that I was feeling day to day. And, you know, it also having to kind of dart through the office to make it to a bathroom comes with some embarrassment, and that then further feeds into anxiety. And, you know, I guess that then brings me to anxiety. I've always been a bit of an anxious person, but at that point in time and experiencing that type of ongoing stress, anxiety was just a daily occurrence for me. So I was feeling general anxiety every day. There wasn't a day where I was waking up not feeling anxious or feeling anxiety throughout the day. Then that anxiety causes further triggers. And what I realize now, I didn't realize at the time, I can remember thinking it at the time, but I realize now that I was depressed, mm-hmm. And suffering some depression. At the time, I can remember thinking, you know, I'm still getting up and going to work every day and I'm still exercising here and there and I'm still having fun with my friends, so I can't be depressed. But, you know, I was at a point where I was kind of crying myself to sleep once a week or a couple of times a fortnight and really struggling to get out of bed in the morning. And, you know, I was definitely suffering some depression. Crying yourself to sleep is not great. You know, we're always going to go through difficult times in life, but when that becomes consistent, you know, it's a sign that there's really something going on with your health.
Yeah.
You know, and my life began to revolve completely around work, and work wasn't making me happy anymore and causing me chronic amounts of stress. And, you know, if I didn't have to work on the weekends, I was probably going out and drinking a lot of alcohol and trashing my body, you know, just to kind of feel some kind of joy instead of trying to pick up hobbies or do things that, you know, truly kind of lit me up. And yeah, so you can imagine the state that my nervous system was in.
Yeah, it would have been fairly heightened.
Poor thing. I got to the point one day where I was like, you know, enough is enough. I was sick of feeling sick and tired all the time and unhappy all the time. And I was also sick of making all of the conversations that I would have with family and friends about work stress and venting. You know, I just kind of had nothing else interesting going on in my life. And friends and family around me were getting married and having families and traveling and doing all of these wonderful things. And I just felt like I was just, you know, it was Groundhog Day and I was just in this vicious cycle of chronic amounts of work and stress. And, you know, even though I was working a lot, I was at the point where I just felt like I wasn't using my brain either. And that's when, you know, I kind of stumbled across IIN, the Institute for Integrated Nutrition. So I think the start of my journey into health coaching, which is what I do now, kind of intertwined with when I really kind of had a bit of a rock bottom moment. But yeah, I'd heard about IIN and I was always interested in food and nutrition and how the human body works. And I'm so much about the why things happen and how things work. And I really kind of geek out on biochemistry and all the little process of the body and how it works. And, you know, I thought with IIN, maybe I'll do this course. Why not? If I learn something, you know, I don't know if I'm up for a career change, but worst, I've learned some information and it surely can't be a wasted opportunity. So, you know, I signed up and enrolled in IIN, but a couple of months into studying at IIN, work really started to become really toxic. And I was watching, you know, a lot of colleagues who I'd worked with for a very long time and very senior, very talented people begin to be bullied and just treated really, really badly. And I began to experience my own bullying, which if I went through that now, I think I would be equipped to deal with it so differently. And I don't think it would have broken me. But after a period of about 6 to 8 months of watching other people be just treated really, really badly and in a way that was completely out of alignment with my values, and I was also in a severe state of burnout, everything just compounded and ended up resulting in what I didn't realize at the time, but it was a minor nervous breakdown. I didn't realize it, but after, you know, about a year, 18 months of healing and kind of reflecting back on what had actually happened, you know, a nervous breakdown is when life's demands become physically and emotionally overwhelming to the point where you can't function in your day-to-day life.
Yeah.
And that's what I experienced. You know, I had it. As I said, it kind of compounded, and then I had a week of panic attacks and not being able to stop crying and just this overwhelming sense of dread. And then it just kind of combusted, and then I just felt numb, like I had nothing else to give the world. which was incredibly awful. I'd never experienced anything like it before, and I hope to never again, and I hope nobody else has to ever go through that, because it's just, you know, I felt like I'd completely had my soul sucked out of me, and not to mention, I guess, the physical things I was feeling in my body from my nervous system just being in such a state. So, yeah, I retreated to my parents' place in Northern New South Wales and saw a friend of mine, a really good friend of mine, who's a GP and a functional medicine doctor, and she put me through the DAS test, so the Depression, Anxiety and Stress Scale test, where they came up with severe anxiety and moderate to severe depression. So I think that also led me to believe to realize that, you know, those periods of time where I was kind of crying myself to sleep at night was depression. And so, you know, she put me on a bit of a protocol and got me to remove stimulants so I could give my nervous system a real chance to heal. So removing coffee and alcohol and as much sugar as possible. And I just took the time to kind of surrender to it. And, you know, in that moment I was like, I really don't know who I am anymore and what I want out of life, what I value, what I desire. You know, I realized I had absolutely no sense of self-worth. You know, I just dedicated so much time and energy to this job that I had, but I just felt like I had nothing else to show for my life. And I think thankfully I was going through IIN at the time, so I was really able to treat myself like my first client, and with everything that I was learning, really start to put those things into practice. So, yeah, it was lots of meditation and walking and breath work, and I was at my parents, so hugs from my parents, just kind of really simple things like that can be so nourishing, and getting back to really beautiful food and journaling about and really diving into what do I value, what do I want out of life. I think that was one thing that was really attracted to IIN was you know, a sense of purpose. You know, how am I spending my days and what am I contributing to the world? And yeah, so I really started to do some work around that, and it took a couple of months of stress leave to kind of rebuild myself, but I got there in the end. And yeah, spending that time working on myself and healing myself with what I'd learned through IIN, that was the point where I was like, this is what I really want to do. And I was then able to, you know, I started working with my first client who I actually worked with for about 12 months. And at the end of that 12 months, she said, you know, our work together has just changed my life. And despite all the stress that I'd experienced and all the negative experiences that I'd had with work, you know, I'd had so much opportunity with my career over the time, which had been so amazing, and I'm so grateful for everything that I've had in that stage of my career. But I tell you, when someone says to you that your work has changed your life and you can see that transformation in someone, and I also knew the transformation that I'd made for myself, there's like nothing more special than that. And yeah, if that's something that I can do every day, you know, for me, that's the greatest job satisfaction I could ever hope for, and, you know, fulfillment of my purpose in life.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's hopefully that's too much of a waffle, but yeah.
I know, incredible, and an incredible journey that you've been on. And like you said, you know, that you had the anxiety, didn't realise that you had the depression. Often they're paired together. Yeah. I had a similar experience where I knew that I had the depression. I didn't realise I had the anxiety until like 8 years later. I'm like, oh yeah, it was there. Do you know what I mean? Like, so being able to sort of put those pieces together. But how did you know that you were at that point? Like, what was the rock bottom for you? Not in terms of what actually happened, but going, I need to do this differently. Was there a switch that happened? What was the change for you to kind of go, I don't have to live this kind of life anymore?
Yeah, I think it was probably actually also getting to a place of feeling really, really lonely in life. You know, I'm currently single. I don't know if I'll be single when this airs, but let's see. But, you know, at the time I, you know, it felt like I was perpetually single, and I dedicated my life to work. And when I was outside of work, the last thing I just didn't have any energy for anything like that. And at the time, that's what I thought was driving that sense of loneliness. But I think what I realized also is I was missing that sense of community and being a part of something, which I'd felt in so many different ways over the years. And I definitely felt in that job at one point in time, but I think because of the way things have evolved, it was just really and I think everyone in the business was just in survival mode. But I think what comes with that lack of community, sorry, I just lost my train of thought. Oh, rock bottom. Sorry. Is purpose. So when you're in a community and when you're a part of something, there's a greater purpose that you're contributing to, whether that's just making your doing something for yourself that's going to make you feel happy in any moment, or whether it's something bigger. And you know, I started thinking about what I was doing day to day, and sometimes I don't like telling this part of the story because I would hate to make anyone that works in that industry feel any less, or that I don't appreciate it. But, you know, I started to also really think about things like the environment and my footprint. And, you know, I once felt such a sense of fulfillment out of being a makeup artist and, you know, working with to some people it might sound really superficial, but also, you know, seeing that transformation in people, even though it's an external physical transformation, whether it's a 15 to 17 year old girl on their formal day who's never seen themselves dressed up like that before, or you know, a woman on her wedding day, or even a mother of the bride, or even working with cancer patients over the years, and these women who have experienced, you know, such trauma in their life. Something as simple as putting makeup on their face can make them feel such an amazing way and feel such a transformation. You know, I used to really feel that passion, but I'd gotten to the point, I think because I was working on the business side of cosmetics, where what I was doing today just wasn't giving me that same sense of passion. So I think that combination of that sense of loneliness and not belonging to anything and not contributing to anything just left me feeling really, really empty. So I think that combined with all the physiological stuff I was feeling and not feeling well, and not ever having those moments of well of feeling like I was doing a good job at anything. And, you know, it just, yeah, I think that all just compounded into I need to make a change.
Yeah. And it's all those little, like, they're little but they're big moments as well that came in and were just sort of tap, 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 like, hello, just letting you know this isn't where you need to be.
Yeah.
And that's for you, like you said, for other people, they love that industry. They're, you know, they thrive in that industry, but it was time to make a change for you. And that real purpose and the impact that you could have on the world wasn't kind of there anymore in that space.
Yeah. And I don't think it's necessarily industry specific.
Correct. Yeah.
I think it happens across all industries when people dedicate so much of their time to something that once brought them so much joy, but unfortunately the circumstance or in the environment that they're with and the people that surround them don't necessarily share a common goal anymore, that's when it really does just begin to suck your soul. And there's more to life than business and profit and all the things that come with that. At the end of the day, you know, profit's definitely not a dirty word. I think where a job or something that anyone does just leaves them feeling battered and bruised and worthless at the end of it, you know, there's so much more to life than that. And, you know, someone's health shouldn't have to suffer at the expense of the success of somebody else's business.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, some people can thrive in that environment and some people don't. So it's just that knowing who you are, what's going on for you, and kind of questioning that and going, maybe this isn't the right fit for me anymore, even though I've loved it in the past.
Yeah, and that it's okay to question those things and really taking a look at, okay, if you feel stuck somewhere, what is keeping you there? What are the thoughts that are stopping you from removing yourself from that situation and doing something that lights you up? Are they your thoughts? Is it social conditioning? Is it the kind of conditioning or thoughts or values that have been instilled in you from your parents or your grandparents that don't align with either how you want to live your life or the opportunity that you actually have? You know, I think so many people across the generations, we all have so much more opportunity than probably our parents have, just because the world has changed so much, you know, since our parents were our age. So life is different. And whilst mostly our parents have our best interests at heart, sometimes you've got to realize that the lessons that they might have taught you or the things they might have tried to instill in you aren't necessarily relevant with what life looks like for you today. So to really find the power in coming up with your own set of values and what's important to you and how that's going to play out with you in life is a really, really powerful thing.
Yeah, and that can be really challenging for a lot of people because we've never really sat down to do that.
Exactly, yeah. I think that's part of one of the big things I've learned through this whole process is that when you put those values down onto paper, it's really, really easy to see where you're living out of alignment with them. You know, values are principles and standards that guide our decisions and our behaviours. So, and they also allow us to create and set and uphold our boundaries. So without those values and knowing why we get out of bed in the morning, why we want what we want and need what we want and desire what we want, you know, it's really hard to understand all of those things if we don't understand our values. And I know for me it wasn't something, I think it probably just organically naturally came into life in different ways, but it wasn't something I sat down as a child to really look at. It's not something we would get taught at school. Might be a bit different now. It's been a while since I've been through the schooling process, and so much I learn about particularly high school these days is so different to what I experienced. But yeah, I think it's something if you're not taught from a very young age to do this type of personal work, you can get to your 30s and you've never done it and you realize that you don't know who you are or what it is that you really want out of life.
Mm. And it's okay to go and explore that. Like, and you don't have to change your job or change your, you know, husband or life or partner or whatever, your kids, any of that sort of stuff. You can just do it in the midst of life.
Yeah, and it can be a great, I mean, I've not personally done it, but I know friends, clients who have done these type of value-based exercises with their husbands, spouse, partners, family, and it's really helped them grow and evolve as a couple, as a parent. It's helped them to understand their children a lot more. It's even helped, you know, some of my clients who are in their 50s with their parents, not that they've necessarily it's helped their relationship with their more elderly parents probably in a way of creating boundaries and setting boundaries. So it's truly a wonderful and such a crucial and important thing in life.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And I think, you know, my experience was I was operating outside of my values, saying one thing, doing another. And then I was like, okay, who are you? Who do you really want to be? And then what does that look like? And knowing that you can bring in values that, you know, like playfulness and fun and happiness, like they're all equally as valid as accountability and bravery and courage and all that sort of stuff. And you can bring that in, and then how it looks for you, how it plays out, well, you get to define that as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So let me know, like, let me ask, what would you say to that woman or man or person who is like feels like their soul is being sucked out of them. They don't want to get out of bed anymore, even though that they know they have to, perhaps to pay mortgages and bills and all the things like that. What would you say to them when they're in that spot?
I would say a couple of things. Definitely start that values piece. Once you've got an idea of those values, as you know, and everything we've just spoken about, then it would be looking at boundaries and where, because it does take time. I was really lucky that, and I've been really lucky to be able to make the transition that I've made financially, all of that type of thing. But a big part of it for me in my personal experience was, and it's, I think Gen Z have now called it quiet quitting, yes, was creating some boundaries around my time. You know, part of starting to break away was, I'm not going to sit in the office till 8 o'clock every night, and I'm not going to get there early because it's benefiting somebody else, but it's just not benefiting me. So whilst you're figuring out what the next step is, start to create some boundaries around your time. If it is your, and that's if it's where time is starting to kind of suck the soul out of you, that can be a really great part. If it's not time, it might be boundaries around what you're going to be prepared to put up with. If it's how people are speaking to you or the relationship side of things, really looking at where you can create boundaries and use your voice. So, which is really, really hard. And I'm still working on that. And I think that was a big part of it for me, being able to feel like I could voice my opinion and have a voice, around anything, particularly where it affected how I was being treated in a situation. But, if you don't feel comfortable having those difficult conversations or standing up for yourself where you want to create a boundary, again, it comes back to values, but starting to work with someone or just explore why you find that difficult, and start to get to know those, also getting to know your triggers, but whether it is, even just speaking to your friends about these things in a bit of a different way. You know, sometimes we can vent about work and it's just, okay, I just need to vent about this annoying, frustrating situation that happened, and then I'm good, I can move on with it. But really getting to the depths of why that was frustrating for you. And if you don't feel comfortable, you don't have those types of relationships with your friends, it's seeking out someone, whether it is a psychologist or a health coach or even communities. There's so many wonderful communities, you know, Facebook groups or through social media, of people that are experiencing these same type of spaces, or women's circles where you can just begin to voice what makes you feel uncomfortable in these situations and take you on that journey of figuring out what those triggers are and giving you the strength to then be able to set those boundaries. And also believe in yourself. I think that was probably one of the biggest challenges for me, and still a challenge, but I'm working on with my business coach, but I'm getting there, and I've come such a long way from that kind of shell of a woman that I was when I had that nervous breakdown. But part of the reason why I was stuck there was just because I didn't believe in myself. And part of what I experienced with when I went through the bullying was manipulation, which is a long story, which I won't go into. But that just contributed to my lack of self-worth. You know, I was putting my needs before the needs of someone else or something else, and particularly a job was a huge challenge. You know, I remember one day I actually nearly walked out of the office. Everybody else went to lunch and I didn't, because I had so much to get done. And also I think everybody else was frustrating me. I just wanted my own time. But I was sitting there on my own and I thought, this is it. Just walk out and never come back, and then it's done with. But I didn't. One, because I know that's not the right thing to do. But mostly because I didn't believe in myself. It's like, if you walk out, then what do you do? What's next? And I didn't believe that I had what it took outside of that job or that business to make something of myself and supplement the same income that I was on, and, you know, be able to start to create that type of financial freedom on my own without the security of being an employee for somebody else's business. I think one theme that was consistent for me was I can't leave this, or I can't do that, or I'm stuck in this cycle of having to do things that I don't want to do. And then one day I realized, I'm like, hang on a second, I don't have to do anything that I don't do in life. No one is the boss of me, and I can do anything I want to do. And that's a mix of, again, that social conditioning and a hangover of a way I thought I had to live my life. But who set those rules?
Agree.
I can make my own rules. It's not like I'm in jail and I've got, I can only do this at this time of the day or that time of the day, and I guess that's probably, I felt like I was in a bit of a prison, but I think believing in yourself is a big one to tackle. And I think part of it that was really, really helpful for me with that was Marissa Peer's work, The I Am Enough. Yeah. So for anyone, I guess, that doesn't know, hasn't heard of Marissa Peer, she's a hypnotherapist who created a concept which is essentially a form of self-therapy called I Am Enough, which really essentially teaches you how to appreciate yourself exactly as you are, rebuild your self-esteem and your confidence, and it's a big one in stop comparing yourself to other people. And I think that that constant repetition of that simple phrase, I am enough, over and over, both aloud and in your head, eventually makes it difficult for your mind to object to it and to tell you that you're not. So believe in yourself, boundaries and values is a really good place to start, because that will then hopefully lead you to what lights me up every day and what can I do differently, or just give you the confidence to step outside. And I think we often think that we need the confidence to do something before we actually do it, but sometimes taking that step and doing something just instantly builds that confidence that we need.
Yeah, it definitely does. It's kind of instilling that, self-belief or self-efficacy that, yes, I can do this thing. And maybe it's the smallest thing of, some days eating an apple rather than trying to change your whole, meal plan effectively. Yeah. And that's the same with life. Like, if you can just do one thing, and whether it's just listening to Marissa Peer talk, that might be enough just to be able to hear how she speaks and the things that she says, that might be enough to just start and kickstart you into whatever becomes your journey.
Definitely.
Yeah. So who have you become because you've been on this journey?
Definitely a much stronger person, more resilient. I was about to say incredibly self-aware. I'm definitely much more self-aware. I think self-awareness has been a huge part in so many different ways, but I think I think with self-awareness comes constant growth and continually learning things about yourself. I think I'm a better friend, a better daughter, and I think of others a lot more because my mind just, I'm just not tunnel visioned into the pressure and the demand of this, of what was that one job. And it's funny because I'm quite naturally a people pleaser, but I think now that comes for me in a sense of supporting others. I think people pleasing a lot of the time is doing things you don't necessarily want to do to keep others happy. But I'm very good at saying no to things now, or, understanding why I'm stepping into something to support someone. I think I've also embraced rebellion. I'm an Aquarian, and rebellion is a trait of an Aquarian that I've never, ever identified with in my life. But I think it shows up for me now in a sense of pushing boundaries and speaking my mind where something is out of alignment with values. So where I'm seeing someone potentially be treated in a way that I disagree with, or myself being treated in a way that I disagree with, or just voicing opinions in any kind of natural state, but also not doing things the same old way just because that's the way they've always been done. You know, that might not seem rebellious for some people, but for someone that's not naturally a risk taker and who's kind of been programmed not to break the rules, that's been a really big deal for me.
Mm, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing. So before I get into the wrap-up questions, is there anything else that you'd like to share?
I don't think so. I just, if anyone can, the biggest probably takeaway is if you are stuck in that cycle of waking up every day, struggling to get out of bed, feeling lonely, and which is probably manifesting physiologically in your health, life doesn't have to be like that. And there is so many jobs, so many opportunities for self-employment. You know, we all need to work unless you're lucky enough to be financially free and you don't need to, or you won the lotto or something, good for you. Yeah. We're all going to spend our time working. So finding something that can light you up and bring you joy, or even that you just feel happy going to every single day. You know, it could be a stepping stone of getting out of something you really don't enjoy doing to something you like doing to then something you love doing. Don't be afraid to believe in yourself and make the change, because once you've made the change, I can tell you the happiness that you feel is just incredible.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. Championing that as well. So tell me, I'm a massive believer in self-love. It's been a cornerstone to my journey. What's one thing that you do for self-love?
It's probably been, and it's a constant, I was going to say work. It's not really work, but embracing my introversion has been one of the best things because, and it took me a really long time to realize how introversion played into my life. But for me, it's about energy exchange. And I know when I've spent a lot of time around people, I feel exhausted and it really zaps my energy. So I've learned how important that time is alone to recharge. And when I don't get this, particularly when I've been really busy, I definitely start to feel those symptoms of burnout and I can start to get a bit moody. And then I think my connections with others aren't as great because I'm pouring from an empty cup. So yeah, I just need that time to refill my love cup and be on my own. And, you know, I had the experience a couple of weeks ago. I had a busy couple of weeks. I spent some time with my family over the weekend. I think it was the October weekend. And I came home and I had the opportunity to go out and do some things with friends. But I thought, you know, I just need that time. Mm-hmm. And it was that push and pull of like, oh, I want to go because it would be good to hang out with them. And, you know, I know I'll have fun once I'm there, but I was like, you know what, I'll set myself up much better for the week if I just have this time to relax and read a book and spend some time on my own. So,
yeah. And what was the flow on effect then into your week?
Oh, so much more. I find it's more energy, more better focus, and just, I think, better coping, like capacity to cope as well. Yeah. Because it purely just comes down to the energy that you have, you know.
Yeah.
Us introverts, yes, it's also about the dynamic of being a quieter person in a situation, but it's very much about that energy exchange and, you know, it time with others zaps your energy. So when you can have that time on your own, it really helps to restore it back to 100% and you're good to go again.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I love my what we call snooze time. So snooze is my nickname. So I go have time out as well. I love it. Yeah. So you've provided heaps of amazing information today. If myself and the listeners were to take one thing away and implement it in our own life in service of you, what would that be?
There's a couple of things, in which I think I briefly mentioned it. But limiting your coffee intake or your caffeine intake, I think, I guess a lot in the realm of what I've spoken about today is stress and how stress impacts your life. And when you're on that hamster wheel and experiencing that Groundhog Day, you probably, coffee is probably a big driver for you. Since I had that nervous breakdown and I had the recommendation of removing coffee, I have, I think I've had one decaf coffee, and I've just realized that caffeine is not for me. And I have had caffeine since then, but I think it's probably been about 18 months now since I've had any caffeine, because I know it just really doesn't agree with my body, and I know how much it affects my nervous system. But it's one of the things that when you're in such a state of chronic stress and experiencing that anxiety and depression, it only fuels the fire. And I guess it's about how it works scientifically in our body. You know, it's caffeine essentially ignites a stress response in our system by producing adrenaline and cortisol, which are those stress hormones that when you're experiencing chronic stress are elevated to the point where it does cause things like ongoing gut issues or hormonal imbalances, brain fog, memory loss. It's, you know, and it can cause something like a nervous breakdown. So I think I've spoken a lot about a few of the other things in terms of, you know, look at where your, you know, the rules that you're setting for yourself, you know, where all those things are coming from. But I think a really tangible thing is, not that that's not tangible, but something that's relatively easy to do is yeah, limit that coffee intake, or at least start to limit it through the week, because I can tell you I still get a little bit of performance anxiety before things that are like presentations or things that are really important, but no general anxiety throughout the day. And I know when I have had those little bits of caffeine, I get to kind of 3 o'clock in the afternoon and I just feel like a ball of anxiety. It just doesn't, you know, and again, everyone is unique, and some people will have a constitution that can deal with the stress and can deal with the caffeine. But I can tell you it's eliminating one thing that is adding to that load of stress throughout the day. So if you are able to reduce or begin to limit or even quit coffee, I know you'll be a much better person for it. You'll feel so much better for it, or it's going to contribute to you turning a corner in starting to reduce the effect that stress has on your body.
Yeah, totally. Well, thank you so much for everything you shared today. Where can people find you, and what is the work specifically that you're doing in the world so they can come and follow you and perhaps work with you as well?
Yeah, so I'm accessible online through my website, so katesquires.com.au, on Instagram, katesquires_healthcoach, and also on Facebook, which I believe is katesquires.healthcoach on Facebook. So I'm a holistic health and nutrition coach, and I work with primarily women. I don't not work with men, but I primarily attract women, and I would never say no to working with anybody, but working with women one-on-one in a couple of different ways. So I have a longer 4-month program, or I also work with people in kind of like a shorter 2-session program. So my longer program, I work with women who are wanting to lose weight, or in some cases gain weight or gain muscle. You know, they might be fatigued, low in energy, they're feeling overwhelmed and anxious, and they've really lost that spark that makes them their beautiful selves, and they're looking for transformation. So it's women who have tried it all, but they're not seeing any results. You know, they might have tried keto, paleo, intermittent fasting this week, this 12-week challenge, that 12-week challenge, but, you know, they're really not seeing any results. And, you know, primarily that comes back to everyone is unique. And so it's about finding something that's going to work and a solution that's going to work in the long term. But then on my kind of shorter 2 sessions, I work with women who over time have established some really great nutrition and movement habits, and they know how their body responds to those things, but they might be at a point in time where they've plateaued. And plateau is a really great place to be, because it guides us to the fact that we do need to take some changes. You know, the body's gotten used to what it is that we're doing, so it's time to kind of amp up some goals or make some changes there. And often that's a really great – I work with women in that space who are approaching perimenopause. You know, they know what feels good for their body, but their body's going through that bit of a change. So how can we kind of pivot and start to get some quick wins? Mm. But really it's about – well, and both avenues is about setting up a sustainable approach to movement and lifestyle and food that's going to stick with them for a lifetime, but also allows for change as their bodies and mind evolve and kind of a change with the ebbs and flows of life. And one thing I do I mentioned earlier, the AI that I work with, Shay. So, yeah, Shay is built from 20 years of research from 15 different sciences and has over 7 billion points of data. So it gives you a personalized recommendation based on your genes and your epigenetics. So telling you what foods to eat and when, what types of intensity of exercise to do and when, careers best suited for you. You know, it's holistic, so it's still it takes into consideration everything that's going on in your life. And so people are seeing some really incredible results with Shay. With my clients, I've had them seeing some really quick wins in all sorts of different areas. But, you know, amongst the community, we're seeing people reverse things like non-alcoholic fatty liver just by introducing a meditation practice into their life, which again comes down to how stress impacts the body, or things like uterine polyps disappearing just by changing food. So, yeah, the genes we're born with never change, but it's our environment that activates them and turns them on and off. So sleep, food, exercise, stress, it all impacts our genes, which enables us to then see where we can make those changes to get those wins in things like, you know, weight management, energy, fatigue, yeah. And even in stress management as well.
Yeah, huge. And there's so much that we can do through our environment, lifestyle, food, movement, meditation that can really be transformative for us without having to go down any kind of medical route exactly. Because we're not turning on those genes effectively.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the wonderful thing about Shay as well is it's a really non-invasive onboarding process. So it's a series of body measurements that they've been able to realize the consistencies in the ratio of these body measurements and how that contributes to your morphology, so how you would have developed as an embryo, as well as a health history and fat characteristics and factors of your health and your parents' and your grandparents' health. So, you know, they looked at things like specific genetic testing and blood work and that type of thing to see how that contributed to the results and the data, but it didn't actually change anything, and that can be a really expensive process to go down. So yeah, the one thing I love about incorporating the AI into my health coaching is that it's really easy, it's really affordable, and you can get some really, it's not necessarily about the quick win, but the quick wins are definitely there. And then once we've had those quick wins, it's about okay, establishing things even further from there.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Kate, for today. Thank you for everything that you shared and going on your personal journey as well. It's been an amazing transformation that you've created, and you're definitely inspiring people. And thank you for all the work that you're doing in the world as well.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for, creating this podcast so we can tell our stories and hopefully impact the lives of others.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today, and I have a couple of small favours to ask. If you love this episode, please share it with someone you love and you know the episode will resonate with. Also, to help spread the word about my podcast, please head over to iTunes and leave me a review. I love hearing your thoughts about my podcast and what's resonating with you. Plus, it helps us share my podcast with the rest of the world, which is amazing. Finally, thank you so much for being here. I'm super grateful for you, and I'm truly honored you've spent your time with me. Let's keep rising, let's keep growing, because it's totally possible to live a life you love every day, right where you are. See you in the next episode.